Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, the Mirror's assistant editor, Darren Lewis, and TalkSport's Alex Crook. As TV contracts are rolled over and Manchester City roll on.
We want to continue to try to do it our best for, for our people, for ourselves.
Gundogan has it and has scored a wonderful goal for Manchester City.
Alex Crook, TalkSport's commentator, thinks the Manchester City's title win was sealed in the Indian Ocean.
The key moment, the absolute key moment for me, was a meeting that took place in the Maldives in the autumn between Pep Guardiola, who loves to go to the Maldives and why not, and the Manchester City chairman. And it was in that conversation, when other managers were actively being pursued at that stage, the likes of Mauricio Pochettino, the likes of Nagelsmann, so Manchester City weren't entirely convinced that Guardiola would sign a new contract. But as soon as he did that, Manchester City's form rocketed, and that uncertainty that I think had seeped into the dressing room suddenly ebbed away.
All the news ahead of the FA Cup final on the way, and a huge preview. Plus, Crystal Palace and Tottenham are having trouble with their situations vacant, and an outlandish destination for the England captain. All on the ultimate preview of the weekend's footballing action from TalkSport. It's the Game Day podcast.
Go and score four away at Liverpool, three away at Everton, and three at home at Tottenham. You know, they just look unstoppable at the minute.
We want to continue to trying to do it our best for for our people, for ourselves.
I actually feel City Group and Manchester City Football Club are currently establishing itself as the biggest football club in the world.
Gundogan has it and has scored a wonderful goal for Manchester City.
Mahrez left footed. Oh, what a brilliant goal!
Finds Foden, who turns and scores, and it's a brilliant equaliser from Manchester City.
And it's turned in by John Stones. He's got another vital goal for Manchester City.
The strength and depth that they've got, They've got their recruitment spot on.
Here's Bernardo Silva, edge of the D, wandering too far towards the edge of the box and shooting past Jordan Pickford.
In our period together, these five seasons together, is the same like the first Premier League we won. We are almost the same guys, we changed players, but the same guy, the same identity.
And the runaway leaders are out on their own again. It's two in a minute for Pep Guardiola's team, and they've blown Palace away.
There is the full-time whistle. Well, you can order the champagne, you can get the crystal glasses out. It's not long now.
And congratulations to Manchester City. A big hello to Darren Lewis and to Alex Crook. Look, there's a lot of games to look at, and some that mean a lot, some that don't, but there's some big news pieces as well that affect the Premier League too and its future. Plus, we've just crowned the champions, which we probably should start with. And Pep Guardiola said this is the hardest, most difficult win of all three of the titles that he has picked up here. How impressed are you with the way they finished, especially, Darren, after the way they started?
I actually think, and I know my colleague at the Daily Mirror, David McDonald, wrote a piece about this, I think this is the most impressive of the lot because they pretty much gave everyone a head start. Well, let's go back to last season. They were 18 points behind Liverpool. They lost David Silva. There were lots of people at the start of the season suggesting that things had gone stale, that maybe Pep had reached the end of the cycle, that maybe that he couldn't, like Sir Alex Ferguson and Arsene Wenger, rebuild a side capable of competing at the very highest echelons of the Premier League. And remember, in their opening game of the season, they were smashed up 5-2, their opening home game, by Leicester. But the day after that defeat, they bought Ruben Dias. And I'm not going to say the change was immediate, because obviously, as we know, they still did have a few dodgy results. And I think in November, when Spurs beat them, they were 11th and 8 points off the pace. And then suddenly they won 22 of the subsequent 27, and Dias was key to that. And he's one of those players, isn't he, where anybody he plays alongside gets better. And then you factor in Gundogan in midfield, who scored 12 goals. They did it mostly without Aguero. They did it mostly without Jesus. I know Crook believes that he's a good striker, but not City class. And so you have to say that this is the best of the lot. For me, more style, more evolution about it, more guile, more points of attack, defensively better. To me, I can't see a better performance during Guardiola's time in charge.
Yeah, it's Pep Guardiola's 9th top-tier title in 12 seasons as a top manager. It's also the 26th major honour that he has won as a boss, with a possible 27th available to winning the Champions League final at the end of the month. For context on that, only Manchester United, Liverpool and Arsenal have won more than 27 major trophies in the history of English football. So in English football, it's Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal and Pep Guardiola. who have been the standout players for you, Crook?
Well, I think Darren is right to highlight Dias. For me, Dias has been not only Manchester City's best player, but I think he's been the Premier League player of the year, because this is a title win built on solid defensive foundations, which isn't necessarily always the Guardiola way. I think Gundogan as well, scoring important goals, stepping up, particularly when De Bruyne was injured mid-season. Don't underestimate his contribution. And Foden, and I think the way that Guardiola has managed Foden, there were people crying out for him to be sent out on loan to the EFL last season. Guardiola was adamant, no, I want him to stay here and develop our way. The fruits of that labour has paid off. And also the way that Guardiola handled Foden after that incident on England duty with Mason Greenwood in Iceland, because it's taken Greenwood a long time on the face of it to get that out of his system, only really in the last 5 or 6 weeks as he managed to find any kind of form. Guardiola clearly put his arm around Foden and said, look, you've made a mistake. Do your talking on the pitch. And my word, has he done that. So they, for me, would be the three standout players. The goalkeeper as well. You look at the number of attacks that he starts. But the key moment, the absolute key moment for me, was a meeting that took place in the Maldives in the autumn between Pep Guardiola, who loves to go to the Maldives and why not, and the Manchester City chairman. And it was in that conversation, when other managers were actively being pursued at that stage, the likes of Mauricio Pochettino, the likes of Nagelsmann. So Manchester City weren't entirely convinced that Guardiola would sign a new contract. But as soon as he did that, Manchester City's form rocketed, and that uncertainty that I think had seeped into the dressing room suddenly ebbed away.
That's a terrific point. And Phil Foden becoming the first Manchester City player to reach double figures in both goals and assists this season by when he came up with that assist for Mahrez in midweek against PSG. He's also the first Englishman under 21 years old to do that for a Premier League club since Dele Alli in 2015-16. I think, you know, it isn't sort of something that we can underestimate or underplay, his development this season. And, you know, you touched on it saying that he's been managed in the right way. I mean, this is a generational talent that Manchester City have got their hands on here, Darren. And how you manage that is really important. And the fact that he's got somebody... I mean, years gone by, Manchester City have produced actually quite a few really great young players. I remember Michael Johnson, who was a terrifically talented player, but wasn't looked after, maybe in the way off the field that he needed to be guided in the right way. The fact that the structures are in place now at Manchester City to do that with someone like... I'm not comparing Johnson to Foden, by the way. I'm just saying that he was a great talent. But Foden is something different. He's something special. Having him and Mount in the same league at the same time and in the same England team at the same time is something to behold, isn't it?
Absolutely. I was talking to an ex-pro the other day who was saying what Foden does, he doesn't think people recognize how difficult it is to do that, the dribbling ability he has to hold off players, keep his balance, be able to have the forethought to be able to pick out the kind of passes that he does. He is a generational talent, you're right. All of that obviously combined with coping with the pressure of wearing the City shirt and performing at the level he does as often as he does and being able to cap some of the performances with goals. He is an outstanding talent. And the thing that you both point to, and to be fair, I've said this before on the pod, Guardiola's handling of Foden's been exemplary, because there were many people, myself included, you know, who felt that while other players of a comparable age were going out and getting regular first team football elsewhere, he was on the bench getting 2 to 3 minutes here, 3 minutes there, 10 minutes here, 12 minutes there, starting the odd League Cup game. Maybe even there were games that weren't that important in the Premier League and he still wasn't starting. And lots of people said Guardiola perhaps should allow him to go out on loan. But Guardiola's been vindicated because his handling of Foden has been outstanding and it's now allowed him to be able to flourish in the way. And you're right to make the comparisons with Michael Johnson. I know you're not being critical of Michael Johnson or anyone else, but there have been some fabulous players come through the City Academy over the years and they've not flourished because they've not been handled in the way that Guardiola has handled Foden. And I think that cannot be overlooked as part of this success.
Michael Johnson, by the way, has gone on to have a very successful career in the hospitality industry. He actually owns the pub at the end of my road here in Didsbury. And it's a banging pub. It's brilliant. It's fantastic.
So while Foden's serving it up to Premier League defenders, Johnson is serving it up to Sam Matterface.
No, he's not. He's not serving. He's the overlord, mate.
We should mention City's other MVP, that hoodie that Pep Guardiola was given by a charity raising awareness of Spanish migrants. He wore it for the first time. I think they beat Southampton by a 0-0. Raheem Sterling got that goal. He's been wearing it ever since. Superstition, and they've barely lost a game, have they?
We're in the barrel here, aren't we?
I think that's probably anything to do with the outcome of the title. But anyway, maybe. I don't know. I'm not a superstitious guy. Kyle Walker, I want to mention him. I think he's been absolutely terrific. One of his best seasons he's played, actually. I think maybe the Cancelo competition has helped him. Maybe the fact that he got to 49 England caps, then got sent off and panicked for his life and thought, oh, there's no chance I'm going to get 50. And then turned out some great performances afterwards. I think he's a stick-on to start the European Championships for England. I think he's been brilliant. He started 13 of the last 19 games in all competition. It's the joint best scoring season of his career. He's done brilliantly, and I think he deserves a mention. Look, they've got Newcastle on Friday night in a game that means absolutely nothing because they've won the title. Newcastle are safe now. They won the last match against Newcastle 2-0. Gundogan, Torres scored the goals. Newcastle had just 25% possession in that game. Is this going to be another really one-sided game on Friday night?
Probably, because Callum Wilson, unfortunately, has broken down again just when he seemed to be coming back to form. A hamstring injury ruling him out for the rest of the season, ending any faint hopes probably that he had of gatecrashing the European Championship squad. And we know that the stats are there. Newcastle are not the same animal without Callum Wilson. Manchester City, I think, will want to come out and put on a performance worthy of being crowned champions. So I think it's very difficult to see anything other than another comprehensive, dominant Manchester City victory.
Yes, the sun always shines on TV. But Sky Sports, BT Sport, Amazon Prime Video and BBC Sport have agreed in principle to continue their existing television deal with the Premier League for another 3 years. Why, you say, is this so significant? Well, because it's been done without an auction for the first time since 1992, and they had to get approval from the government in order to do that. And also, in order to do that, Darren, they had to give some cash away. Clearly, they weren't happy going to auction. What are the reasons for this? And why is it important, Darren?
Well, I think you've just summed it up. You know, these are unprecedented times. coronavirus, the impact of the coronavirus has been huge, and the clubs don't want a situation where the value of the rights spirals out of control at a time when they are struggling, really, barely. I don't want to be too...
Do you think they were worried that the TV deal was going to dip and they weren't going to have enough competition? Because let's be clear, BT Sport have given up their FA Cup rights recently. There's lots of speculation about the fact that they might end up selling either the business or some of the parts of the business. Obviously, Amazon Prime Video have only recently come into Premier League football, and it's been relatively successful, I think, for them, but mainly because they've got more games than they actually paid for initially this season. So, I mean, were they a little bit concerned, actually, that they weren't going to get the cash that they thought they were going to get?
Well, yeah, in a word, yes. I mean, the current deal, which is worth £4.7 billion, that was agreed in 2018, and that represented a 10% drop in value. Now, this is a deal that's been agreed in principle under the Competition Act. So, as you say, it allows the league to renew without the tender process. But they were concerned that there could be another fall in value if the usual open market auction started as planned. I think it was scheduled to begin next month. And so they were so worried about that that they just thought, let's just do it. It looks very much as though the value for domestic leagues in Europe appears to have peaked. Let's just do it now. Shake hands on an agreement in principle. I think they issued a statement today ahead of our podcast recording on Thursday morning saying that in the light of the damaging COVID-19 pandemic, the Premier League were able to demonstrate to the government exceptional reasons why it felt that there should be this exclusion order, basically.
I think they get away with it because of Brexit as well, can't they? I mean, I think one of the reasons why they had to have a tender was because European competition law made it so that you couldn't have one dominant broadcast partner, which is what they had before with Sky, and then they had to break that up and have at least one package going elsewhere. Crook, what did you think of it? And what does it mean for the rest? What does it mean for the Premier League?
Well, I think it's not just the Premier League effective. It means that more money, or we know money will be able now to filter down to the EFL, not necessarily more money, because of course the value of the deal hasn't gone up. But I think that would have been attractive for the government, because they'd rather that Premier League clubs and television companies were paying EFL clubs than them having to put together any kind of rescue package. I think the other interesting element that's almost gone under the radar, because we've been so focused on the money element, is that BT Sport have actually publicly said that to help with fixture congestion, that if a team are playing in Europe on a Wednesday night, if they're playing in the Champions League, they won't be made to kick off in that prime time slot of 12:30 on a Saturday lunchtime. It will be moved to an evening game, which is great if you're Jurgen Klopp, because we know that was one of his hobby horses this season. Not so great, I would suggest, if you're an away fan looking to travel somewhere on a Saturday night. We know it's notoriously difficult to get back by public transport at that time.
And on cars, weekend, they always close the motorways. Yeah.
Well, they do, exactly. So once again, football fans, I'm sure various supporters groups will have their say on this. They're the last ones that have been consulted.
Okay, well, with West Bromwich Albion and Fulham already relegated along with Sheffield United, City already declared as the champions, Chelsea and Leicester edging towards taking a stranglehold on the top four, we are eternally grateful that at least we've got an FA Cup final to look forward to.
Space for Ziyech inside the middle of the box, and he squared it, and it's in, and Hakim Ziyech puts Chelsea in front. It's Chelsea who go through to the FA Cup final in the middle of May.
This will be huge, absolutely. I mean, the FA Cup is one of the most prestigious cup in the world.
Leicester 3, Manchester United 1, and now they will dare to dream those foxes.
The club is over 50 years since it's been to the final, which is, you know, amazing. But when that comes, we want to win it.
And Chelsea against Leicester is live on TalkSport at 5:15 this Saturday. I'll be there alongside Andy Townsend. Can't wait for that. It's the first FA Cup final in 52 years for Leicester. They've never won one. Leicester lost a pressure knockout game against Slavia Prague and stumbled to a win in the semi-final over Southampton. Chelsea, a little bit more used, Darren, to this sort of occasion. They've seen off Atleti in the Champions League, Manchester City in the FA Cup semi-finals, Madrid in the Champions League. How much does big game experience and nous come into an occasion like this?
massive. I'd argue that the most important person in this situation is actually Tuchel, because Tuchel has that ability to handle pressure in big games. And I think he is on a mission, isn't he, to render the decision by PSG to cut him loose at Christmas absolutely horrendous, because they must be looking at him going into a cup final, going into a Champions League final, steering a club with a serious chance of finishing in the top four of the Premier League, and thinking, did we go too soon? Consider we are looking up at Lille in the league and we are out of the Champions League. And clubs do this all the time. Instead of investing in better players defensively, they go out and get another manager and ask them to overachieve. Look, as far as Tuchel is concerned, done a great job. We've done all the numbers many times here on the pod. I just think his experience, and in many respects, the defeat against Arsenal will weigh heavily in Chelsea's favour. He will demand a response, and I think he'll get it. I think they'll be too good for Leicester.
I mean, I know it's a separate debate, but Maurizio Pochettino, who has had a bit of a reputation of not being able to get over the line and win things, has got two games in Ligue 1 to win the title, and he's 3 points behind Lille. I mean, Crook, as an advocate and pseudo agent for Maurizio Pochettino, how do you react to that?
Well, they were in a bit of a mess, weren't they? In fairness, when he took over, hence so you're just going to Tuchel was sacked. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Let's see how he fares next season.
Let's move on. I've met Thomas Tuchel on a number of occasions now, and one of the reasons he did get sacked was because he kept falling out with everybody. Apparently, he fell out with everybody at Borussia Dortmund. He fell out with everybody at PSG. He is so nice. He's so friendly. He's so polite. He has a little bit of arrogance about him. But then again, you know, he's an elite football manager. I just hope that this Thomas Tuchel continues next season once he signs his new extended contract, which I'm sure is in the offing. Darren?
The stats going into this match to guarantee two players will start. Chelsea, they've conceded 26 goals in 19 Premier League games when Antonio Rudiger hasn't started this season, compared to only 7 that they've conceded in the 17 games when he has started. And also Mason Mount, everyone said he was Frank Lampard's favourite son, but Thomas Tuchel is realising, and Gareth Southgate, of course, his value to the Chelsea team, created more chances than any other player taking his tally to the season to 82. Only Bruno Fernandes for Man United has created more in the Premier League this season with 92.
Yep, he's an absolute gem. Look, Leicester showed great fortitude to come back and win a big game away at Manchester United, despite taking the lead, letting it slip and winning it, thanks to a very good second half performance. But it was Manchester United-ish, wasn't it? Although they also beat them in the quarterfinal. In recent weeks, actually, if you look at Leicester's performances, take a longer view of it, their performances haven't been great, have they?
No, and you do worry about them in pressure situations, because they did their best not to win that game against Manchester United, and that would have been a massive opportunity loss given the weakness of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's team selection. They weren't brilliant in the FA Cup semi-final. Southampton were just worse. So they are going to need to raise their game. We're going to need to see the Leicester side that started the season in such commanding form. And it's difficult, isn't it, just to switch it on and off like a tap at this stage of the season. Having said that, in Kelechi Iheanacho, they have a man who has really excelled in the FA Cup this season. I think he will be a big danger for Chelsea with that partnership with Jamie Vardy. But Johnny Evans, still a possibility. He could be fit for the weekend. I think really and truly he has to be fit. Yeah. Otherwise, it's difficult to make a case for Leicester.
He will be. He will be. There's the you know, look, it's the biggest game of their season. It's the biggest game that they've had probably since they won the title. So it's absolutely massive. And he probably could have forced it on Tuesday night if he really needed to, but they decided to protect him for the weekend.
Just on this game, I was having a bit of a debate with one or two Leicester fans on social media last night, because somebody posed the question, FA Cup or top four, if you had to choose one or the other. And I thought most Leicester fans would say the FA Cup, because you say they've never won it. They've got a bit of history when it comes to losing finals. But our esteemed football editor, Jason Bourne, big Leicester fan, you'll know that if you follow him on Twitter, he said he'd rather have the Champions League because that gives the club a more solid foundation for the future. My heart sunk a little bit hearing that, because plays into the narrative.
I thought Jason would be a romantic. I thought he would be. I thought he'd be all over the FA Cup. I mean, I must admit, I'm an FA Cup guy. I like the FA Cup. So I believe that putting silverware down on your mantelpiece is the most important thing you can do over the course of a season. If they get, they'll get into the Champions League anyway now. I think that win is going to secure that. Look, we joke about Chelsea. We joke about the fact that they have so many shots, they give hen and stag parties a run for their money. But the accuracy and conversion of those shots is incredibly poor. Again, missing big chances in midweek. That is going to cost them at some point, Darren.
It is, because you just... Well, we already know the reasons why. And it underlines the fact that they do need another striker. And I think the scenes between Thomas Tuchel and Aubameyang didn't go unnoticed in the wake of the Chelsea defeat to Arsenal on Thursday night. Quite clearly, that's not going to happen, excuse me, this summer, given that Aubameyang signed a longer-term deal. But I think it will be the case that Chelsea will look around at a high-class striker. I don't think it'll be Haaland. I think a lot of clubs are backing away from Haaland. I think it quite possibly it could be Kane if Chelsea were to sell some of the big-name players not getting a game at the club.
Imagine.
To match the box to be able to get him. And if they were, as you say, imagine if they were to get Kane to finish off the many chances that they create in any given game, then they really would be serious challengers to City, given the defensive strength they've got at the club.
I don't think that if Daniel Levy sanctioned that deal, he would be the chairman of Tottenham Hotspur for much longer.
But then you say that, Sam, but we've been here before. I said this the other day.
We've never been there before.
Berbatov, Bale. No. You know, the players who want to leave Tottenham get their way.
But not to Chelsea. Not to Arsenal. It doesn't happen. The only time it's ever happened is because Sol Campbell ran down his contract. Harry Kane has a massive, massive contract which has got long time to run on it.
Yeah, but if they were to offer the money that Spurs want, then it would do one of two things. It would give Levy a huge decision to make, but more importantly, it would give Kane a huge decision to make. If Chelsea are the ones that put the money down,
no chance.
You look at Chelsea and you say they are a side with a serious chance of going toe-to-toe with City. You know, imagine if Tuchel had come into Chelsea earlier this season.
But he can't do it. Harry Kane can't do it. He ruins his legacy at Tottenham Hotspur. He can't do that. It's not going to happen.
I think he'll go to Manchester City.
He's going to go to City or United. And now, after Cavani signing the United...
Wait. You both think so. And I happen to agree. But the question, Crook, isn't where is he going to go? The question is, what would he do if Chelsea were the only option on the table?
I don't think he would tarnish his legacy at Tottenham by moving across London. You know, you look at Sol Campbell. I spent a bit of time with Sol Campbell recently. We got a documentary on TalkSport being Sol Campbell very shortly, and he's still scarred by what happened. He described himself as being dehumanized when he left Tottenham to join Arsenal. I don't see Harry Kane putting himself in that situation.
No, I don't either. Look, one of the things that got Chelsea into the position that they are in is their imperious defensive record. Arsenal got on the score sheet in midweek, but only because Chelsea gifted them a chance. 12 clean sheets in the first 14 that Thomas Tuchel was in charge of. Kepa is going to play the final. We should touch on that. I text Crook earlier in the week about this and said that I think Kepa's going to play the final. Actually, he's done all right recently in terms of keeping the ball out of the net, hasn't he? I mean, he almost spared Jorginho's blushes on Wednesday night.
Yeah, that was exactly what your text said. It was just as measured as that, I remember.
quickly, talk about something else.
He did okay. It wasn't his fault, the goal. It was Jorginho, who, by the way, has come out 24 hours after that game and said how happy he is at Chelsea and wants to commit his future. I'm sure Chelsea fans will be delighted to know that after such an incredible blunder. I mean, what was he doing?
I think he would be delighted to extend his contract now after that.
It was incredible, but it's a big call. I know Kepa's been the cup goalkeeper, and in some ways you have to herald Thomas Tuchel for staying loyal, but if he makes a mistake that cost them the FA Cup, everybody to a man will say, well, why didn't he pick Mendy?
So before we look into what we expect to see at the weekend, there are two games that were played on Thursday night, absolutely pivotal to the European race, and Alex Crook and I actually were at them. I was at Manchester United, Liverpool. Crook was at the game in Birmingham between Villa and Everton. But let's start at Old Trafford.
Manchester United 2, Liverpool 4. What a terrific game. And they really aren't always like this. But ultimately, I suppose, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's plan backfired, didn't it really? Because earlier in the week, United rested 10 players against Leicester because they wanted to target this particular game that was postponed originally after fans' protest 10 days ago. But the one player they missed the most was the one that they arguably played too much beforehand. And that was Harry Maguire. 72 consecutive Premier League games for Manchester United before his injury, and that injury exposed his colleagues' frailties. Many thought he wasn't really worth the 80 million quid that they paid for him from Leicester, but on this evidence, really and truly, I mean, they can't afford to be without him. All the goals that Manchester United conceded were avoidable. Phillips given too much time after a corner, a silly free kick given away by Pogba, poor marking. Then Luke Shaw and Fred competed for who could be the most culpable as Firmino scored his second after half time. It was scarcely believable that Firmino actually had been on his longest run without a goal for Liverpool. Jota hit a post before the hour mark and Liverpool were threatening to run away with it. They were very good second half. They didn't. United pulled one back, and actually if it had come in a slightly different scenario, I think maybe it would have been a contender for United's goal of the season. Such was a slick build-up involving Rashford, Cavani, Fernandes. But despite pressurising Liverpool, when they were trying to go for the equaliser, they got caught on the break. In the last minute, Salah races away on the counter-attack, makes it four. Now, this is what it means, and it's really important, because it means not only the Egyptian goes level with Harry Kane in the race for the Golden Boot, more importantly, it means that if Liverpool beat West Brom, they beat Burnley, and they beat Palace, there is absolutely every chance now that Jurgen Klopp's team will nick a top four place at the expense of Leicester or Chelsea. Because now they can get 69 points. And Leicester play Chelsea at Stamford Bridge with a few fans in next Tuesday. It's going to be a really tense end to the season. I think the race for the top four is going to go right down to the wire. There's even a scenario where Leicester could miss out on goal difference or Chelsea could miss out by a point. That's probably for another day. Certainly it will stoke debate, but it is a first victory for Liverpool at Old Trafford under Jurgen Klopp, and it means that their season is very much alive. Is that the case for Everton, who played Aston Villa before this match and Crookie was watching?
Everton host Sheffield United at Goodison Park on Sunday tea time in a game they simply have to win to stand any realistic chance of qualifying for the Europa League, let alone the Champions League, which was their aim at the start of the season. Those top four aspirations were dealt a fatal blow as they limped to a 0-0 draw against Aston Villa on Thursday night. 98 minutes of my life that I'll never see again. It was a timid display from Carlo Ancelotti's side. Defensively sound, surely they will be again against the Blades side, who are hardly prolific, but they need to get the ball up to Dominic Calvert-Lewin against his former club much more than they did in the West Midlands. I think Ancelotti will see it as another missed opportunity in keeping with the season, really. They play Wolves in midweek. They really need 6 points from these two games because Manchester City are their opponents on the final day, and Ancelotti is shrewd enough and experienced enough to know they won't want to go into that game having to get a result.
Sigurdsson will take the free kick, lofted high towards the far post. It's nodded back across the face of goal, and it's a really good save by Martinez to turn the ball behind. El Ghazi over the free kick here, hits it right footed, fisted away at the near post by Pickford. Well, here is a big moment for Aston Villa, the return of Jack Grealish. High to the far post, Calvert-Lewin with the header, brilliant save by Martinez, right towards goal by the Corre, and almost under the crossbar, Richarlison heads it over the top, and Everton miss a glorious chance to move into the top six. Everton will regard this as a missed opportunity. Full time, Aston Villa 0, Everton 0.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Brighton take on West Ham on Saturday at 8 o'clock. It's live on TalkSport. Crook, I know you're doing this game as well. West Ham took a knockback last weekend when they lost to Everton. Could their Champions League hopes be finished off at the Amex against a Seagull side that have started to get their just rewards and would have actually followed up wins over Leeds, Newcastle and Saints with a win over Wolverhampton Wanderers if Lewis Dunk hadn't have been sent off at the weekend?
Yeah, and Dunk will be a big loss this weekend, obviously starting the suspension. I think he's been one of Brighton's standout players. I've said in the pod, I think he has the ability to go and really play for a top club and should be certainly in the conversation for a place in the European Championships. In terms of West Ham, three defeats now in their last four matches. They've lost form at just the wrong time of the season. I guess it was inevitable given the lack of depth possibly in the squad. They've picked up some injuries that have been a factor in that. And Brighton
actually
have a really
good
record.
Do you think that's pressure?
Yeah,
as well?
Probably. Yeah, probably. Although, from the outside looking in, there shouldn't be pressure on West Ham because they've already overachieved. They've already exceeded their preseason expectations tenfold. But it's inevitable when you're a professional sportsman and you have an opportunity to maybe create a piece of history that is going to heap on some psychological pressure. And they don't have a great record against Brighton in the Premier League. Brighton will have one or two famous wins against West Ham. I think it will be difficult for West Ham to get back on winning form on Saturday night.
Okay. Darren, I know that you're in the middle of some sort of torrential storm there, and we don't want you to get blown away or swept into the River Thames.
But I should apologise in advance. What you can hear behind me is very, very heavy downpour midway through this podcast. So if it gets a bit louder, if you're a bit distracted, that's the reason why.
Sorry. Okay. Listen, if you're sitting at home and you're listening to this thinking you're distracted, imagine how Darren feels. He's worried about his safety. He thinks he's going to get washed downstream. West Ham United, let's just talk a little bit about David Moyes because he's done a very good job. No matter what happens this season, he should probably be in the conversation for someone who deserves at least maybe second place in Manager of the Year because obviously Pep winning the title, winning the League Cup, possibly getting a Champions League winner's medal as well will take that honour. But David Moyes done a very good job. What's his contract situation? I mean, is he definitely wedded to West Ham United?
Yeah, he stays anyway. I know people were speculating on it, but my understanding is that because they are obviously safe from relegation, that triggers another year regardless. But given the job that he's done, the foundations that he's laid, the players that he's improved, the transfer business, the fact that he's enhanced his own reputation and got West Ham into a European place, could yet, I know it's extremely slim, but it could yet be a Champions League place. He will get a longer term deal and expect that to be announced in the summer.
There's no sort of suggestion that he might be tempted by Celtic, no?
Well, do you know what? Somebody said to me yesterday, if you were Spurs, rather than messing around with some of the untried talent that's out there who will eventually have good careers but are nowhere near experienced enough to take over a club the size of Spurs, you could do a lot worse than get a David Moyes. And actually, that made perfect sense to me, because the reason for, let me give some context around West Ham. After 34 games last season, they were fifth from bottom, 3 points above the relegation zone. At the same stage this season, they are 5 points off the top four in fifth, and with a real chance of still taking it to the final day in the race for Champions League football. That's the job he's done. And how's he done it? Hard work. Anyone who thinks of themselves as being above that doesn't play. And I think that's what Spurs do need if you are looking for someone to succeed Jose Mourinho. So yeah, I can see all of the reasons why he's enhanced his reputation and why they would want to keep him. And the West Ham fans, crucially, who after Pellegrini left were saying that Moyes signaled a lack of ambition, they are all to a man Team Moyes now.
Just to reiterate, you don't want to go back to Tottenham, do you? Clearly, because you've already sold Harry Kane on this podcast, and now you're trying to get them to recruit David Moyes. West Bromwich Albion against Liverpool, Crook, Sunday 4:30. Liverpool needed to win every single game. It shouldn't be a problem with this one, should it? Although in the recent past, West Brom have caused them problems, and everybody's playing with a little bit of freedom now.
I was going to say, Big Sam was howled for a managerial masterclass by one of the commentators on TalkSport International after that game at Anfield. I'm not completely convinced that I subscribe to that narrative. I think Liverpool, in keeping with their season, really missed a lot of chances, and West Brom managed to stage a smash and grab in the second half. But listen, if Liverpool are serious about getting back into Europe next season, and it isn't a give me, they have to win this game. They have to win every game between now and the end of the season. And I think they will. You know, West Bromwich Albion relegated. I know talks have taken place between Big Sam and the club already about the possibility of him staying on next season, although the vibe I'm getting is that maybe there won't be the financial resource that perhaps he would want to guarantee they could come straight back up. Chris Wilder is another name that's been mentioned to me by people close to the Hawthorns, and you could see why that would be an attractive appointment for them, although again, maybe not for him, if they're not going to back whoever comes in the transfer market.
Everton against Chris Wilder's former club, Sheffield United, Sunday, 7 o'clock. A nice, easy home fixture for Everton. But that's usually where they end up faltering, isn't it? A place in the Europa League possible. They can't afford to drop points against a side that have slipped into the Championship with 11 defeats in 13 games. This should be a home win, shouldn't it, Darren?
100%. I think on the face of it, you would say so, but then you look up at the points they dropped at home against Leeds, against Newcastle, against West Ham, against Fulham, against Burnley. They are so bad at home. They lost to all of those teams. They drew against Crystal Palace at home. They lost to Aston Villa at home. And if they'd even got half those points, they would be in with a serious shout of the top four. But as things stand, they're scraping around. I don't even believe they'll win this game, if I'm perfectly honest with you. I think away from home they've been a bit better, but lots of draws in that form as well for Everton. So I think in the summer, Ancelotti must, if he's going to challenge for silverware or Europe next season, he has to go out and get at least one more central defender, a commanding central defender, possibly even two, and he needs competition in goal, because at the moment defensively Everton are shocking.
Talking of teams that are all over the place defensively, Tottenham take on Wolverhampton Wanderers. Can that Spurs defence repel the hungry Wolves, Crook?
Wolves that hungry?
Not really.
I'm not convinced they have been. Well, this could be a job audition, couldn't it, for Nuno Espirito Santo, who's one of many managers who've been mentioned as a possible successor.
Every manager has been mentioned. There hasn't been one manager who hasn't been mentioned, apart from Pep, Tuchel and Mikel Arteta.
It will be fascinating to see what road they go down. I know you've touched on it already, but Scott Parker, it was suggested to me, will definitely be interviewed for that job. Is that the aisle that Tottenham should be shopping in? Someone who's just overseen his second relegation? I'm not sure.
I'm just going to make an argument on that, right? Okay, if you look at it slightly differently and think that Frank Lampard was hired by Chelsea, who have a club probably with a higher expectation than Tottenham, right? From Derby, after Derby failing to get up through the playoffs, Hiring a manager with Premier League experience actually isn't that much of a stretch. It's not that much of a stretch. Now, you said what happened there. Well, actually, what happened there was he brought through probably Chelsea's best player in the last 10, 15 years in terms of Mason Mount from the academy, since probably John Terry, and gave them the platform to allow some of those younger talents to flourish, plus got them into the Champions League position despite the fact they had a transfer embargo. So, you know, let's just be a little bit careful about how we assess the performance of Frank Lampard. I know what we like to do is we turn around and say everyone's rubbish when they don't win a Champions League, but that's not entirely true. But in terms of making a decision about Scott Parker and going to Tottenham, it's not the biggest stretch in the world to believe that with Tottenham's current resources, their ambition, which isn't as high as Manchester United, Manchester City, and Chelsea, it isn't. Let's just be honest about it, because otherwise they wouldn't be in the situation that they currently are. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that they might do it.
Well, Sam, I'm sorry, I join in with Crook there. You're making a case for why it could happen, but eventually
I'm not saying it should happen. I'm saying it isn't as much of a stretch as everybody's making out.
How do you sell a guy whose team couldn't defend, can't score goals,
apart from that?
Yeah, exactly. He's been relegated twice in the last 3 years, but he speaks superbly well and he dresses nice. Really? Come on. I mean, this is the, you know, it's a serious note and it's for another day, right? But I think of all the black coaches in English football, right? And I think they must think to themselves, these are guys who get the keys to big clubs. Shearer, Newcastle, Southgate, Middlesbrough, Lampard, Derby, then Chelsea. The Parker with Fulham, and now people are talking about him for Spurs. You know, the price for failure for these guys is bigger clubs. And you've got other managers who are sitting by themselves, kicking their heels, can't get a look in. Because we are making the case for guys who have failed. And
No. I'm not making the case. I'm making the case for the situation happening. I'm saying it's possible. It's not possible.
It cannot be. It cannot be.
Well, it is. Because you just already said he's going to be interviewed for the job, so it is possible.
Sam, it's an indictment of our football culture. If a guy who has failed, he has failed. Let's not kid ourselves. He has failed. Tell me one single metric that qualifies him to take over one of the biggest clubs in the country.
Time for a whistle-stop tour of one of our great fixtures this weekend through the prism of stats, and I want you guys to give me your best stat from the game. But why am I reading this out? This is Lucy's script. Anyway, I'll go back to that. Hello, Lucy. How are you?
I'm good, Ty, yeah.
Yeah, good. So sorry about the argument there. You know, we get a little bit feisty, you know. But anyway, let's talk about Southampton Fulham, yeah?
Yeah, let's do it. So it's time now for a quick look at one of our weekend fixtures. Sam's already revealed it. He's also already partly read my script. So let's just crack on. Give me a stat from this game.
Yeah, I got a little bit excited there. Sorry, Lucy, I didn't even ask you how you were this week and what you've been up to, because usually you've got some hilarious story.
Well, actually, I've got a really embarrassing story.
They usually start that way, yeah.
I'm in the market at the minute for a new driving instructor.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because on Tuesday when I had a lesson with him, we were having a great time. And I went to change gear quite quickly and accidentally grabbed his thigh rather than the gear.
Is that because you've got bad hand-eye coordination, or because this was a really small car?
It was because there was an oncoming car and I thought, oh gosh, I better change down quite quick. So I reached across quite fast and I was like, oh, sorry. We all took it in good humour, though.
Did you? Well, clearly not, because you're changing your driving instructor. Is this induced by him or you?
Oh, no, it's me, because I don't think I can look him in the eye again.
How high up on the... No, don't answer that question. Right, OK, let's go for it. What's on Stats Entertainment?
I've already told you what's on Stats Entertainment, so we're going to go around the people now.
OK.
Okay.
Sam has gone full anchorman today, hasn't he?
Right, go on, Sam. Take it away.
Oh, you want me to take it away? Okay, yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, look, Fulham are going down, and we've had our little debate about Scott Parker. It pains me to say it, but they are. And what do you expect, really? I mean, you lot all you'll blame Scott Parker, but assessment really is about expectation, the fact that Fulham gave themselves a chance, albeit a slim one a month ago, when they could have gone against above Newcastle United. That was a surprise in itself, bearing in mind they got so many loan players and a very small budget. The fact that if Ademola Lookman doesn't miss from 4 yards out against Leeds, they stay up is irrelevant now. Especially seeing as seconds later, the boy Rafinha wraps in a goal at the other end and actually kills off all their chances. The issue is the home form. They've been absolutely rubbish at home. They've only won 2 games at home. But beware, Southampton. Beware. Because Fulham have actually only lost 2 of their last 11 away from home. They're coming for you this Saturday, Saints. They're coming for you.
You say Fulham are rubbish at home.
Yeah.
How many games have they won away from home?
Well, they've only lost 2.
They've won 2 games at home, 3 games away.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where Scott Parker's Fulham play, they are rubbish.
They're not rubbish. They're just not as good as some of the other teams in the league. Stop laughing. Why are you laughing so hard? Is that your stat, by the way?
No, no. I've got all kinds of stats to highlight how rubbish Fulham are, but I thought I'd...
I think
I'd let them off.
To be clear, we like Scott Parker. The Premier League needs fresh ideas. It needs Scott Parker, absolutely. It needs refreshing. He's honest. But in terms of what his team does, you can only judge managers and their capabilities and what their teams do. And he would admit himself that he needs more time and more support to be able to bed down a side that is going to do well in the Premier League. So
I agree with you.
Bagging him off for the sake of it. We're just looking at what his team have done and saying, as a CV, it doesn't qualify him for a bigger job.
I agree with you, but that wasn't my point. My point was, is that the process is so flawed and Tottenham lack ambition that it is not beyond the realms of possibility that he gets the job.
Anyway, do you want my stat, Lucy?
Yeah, go on.
So I'm going to focus a bit more on Southampton, but there could be a little ray of light for Fulham in this game. I've mentioned how rubbish they are, home and away, but they might get a bit of a leg up at St Mary's on Saturday. Southampton conceding a penalty missed by Milivojevic, poor penalty saved by Fraser Forster in midweek. That was the 9th spot kick that they've conceded in the Premier League. That's a record for them. Their previous most was 6 in 93-94 and 16-17. They've also given away penalties in 7 of their last 15 games.
Wow.
I guess the issue for Fulham is that they're as rubbish at scoring penalties as they are scoring from open play.
You know what I mean? If I had somebody like Sam defending me who laughs when someone else slags me off, what chance have I got?
I'm just a happy guy. I just think everything's funny. Go on, Darren. Come on, stat us off.
Southampton are going to win this match. Danny Ings may well score the winner. The leveller he scored the other day for Southampton was his 100th in his professional club career in all competitions. It's now 101. He scored more goals for the Saints, 46, than he scored for any other side. Also, at set pieces, Fulham are poor and Southampton are very good. 14 of their 44 Premier League goals this season from set piece situations. And as you talk about penalties, Crook, well, Forster actually hasn't done too badly, say 3 of the last 5 that he's faced in the Premier League. Fulham, by comparison, have only scored 9 times at home this season. I actually had to double check that stat because it's so bad. 35 games in and they've only scored 9 times. I'm sorry, I'm not having the case for Fulham winning this match at all.
You two just picking on the little guy. Unbelievable.
He's got a good wardrobe, though.
Are you talking about me or Scott Parker? Lucy, what's the results?
Do you know what? I think we're all quite on the even at the minute. Oh. So I don't think we should do a last place one this week. Oh. Okay.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Scrap relegation. What's your name? John W. Henry.
And that's 1 point drop from you now.
All right.
I was going to give 3s across the board, but you're going to now get a 2. So Crook 3, Darren 3, Sam 2.
Right, where does that leave the table? Have you got the table there? Can you work out the table that quickly?
Yeah.
Or is your maths as good as your driving?
Got strong GCSE maths in me, so that's fine.
Don't grab anyone's thigh.
Darren's on 15. Crook is on 11. And Sam, you're on 12.
Ah, so Crook's still bottom. That's the most important thing. He's going to get relegated and has a crap wardrobe. Final part this week. Just two quick games. Burnley against Leeds, which starts our game day on Saturday. And Crystal Palace against Aston Villa, Sunday midday. Also on Talk Sport 2. These games really are irrelevant. It doesn't matter what happens here. I mean, Leeds, I suppose you could argue, are looking to ensure that they finish in the top half of the table. That would be a major success for Marcelo Bielsa and his team. I remember earlier in the season, he said he hadn't done a very good job because they weren't in the top 10 consistently. So the idea of them actually finishing in that position, I think, will probably be a huge sort of thing for them. And for Burnley, I suppose, and the fact that they're still in the Premier League next season is a miracle.
I wanted to praise Chris Wood, the hand that he's had in them successfully navigating their way away from the relegation scrap, the goals that he's scored, the way he's led the line. Isn't it about time Chris Wood was afforded the opportunity at a bigger club to really go and showcase his talents? I think he's a terrific striker. He's got wonderful technique. He's a menace for defenders. Obviously, he's fantastic in the air, but he's got great movement as well. I think he's now at the stage where he's too good for Burnley. I know West Ham want a centre forward next season. Surely, Darren, he's someone they should be having on their radar.
Yeah, he should be. The only problem is that Burnley overpriced their players. Tarkowski, £50 million they wanted for him last summer. And West Ham, as you know, went away and bought Koufal with a fraction of that money. And I would imagine that if Chris Wood were available, they'd want silly money for him. But I think you're absolutely right. The goal he scored the other day is 150th goal for Burnley. He's done so superbly well for that club. Good in the air, good on the deck, and a wonderful, honest striker as well. I agree.
Crystal Palace against Aston Villa is Sunday at midday. Okay, I suppose now this is the time to talk about Frank Lampard emerging as a major contender to be the new Crystal Palace manager. Obviously, there's been quite a lot of discussion about the fact that Roy will probably move on. I know some people think that he might stay. I mean, I think he might stay as sort of like director of football or something like that. But having spoke to him twice over the last few weeks, he seems pretty sort of cards close to his chest, but basically saying I'm leaving at the end of the campaign. I mean, that's the vibe that I'm getting from him himself rather than anybody else. Frank Lampard, if he does take over that job, by the way, has got a massive, massive job to do because, you know, I think for an experienced manager, the idea of rebuilding a club with loads of new players, great. But if you haven't got as much experience, bringing in so many different, it's going to take a few windows to turn that club around. I mean, I was talking to a football director this week who was saying, whoever goes in at Palace, you know, they've really got to trust them because it's going to be three or four windows before you start to see any sort of major change. Because, you know, the results there have been all right this season. You know, they ain't been great to watch, but they get the job done every year. Now you're talking about changing the entire wardrobe and then coming out and setting a new fashion. It's going to be very, very difficult.
It is. And part of the problem at Palace is that there are 14 players out of contract at the end of the season.
That's what I mean.
Now, that suggests that they are getting ready to clear the decks in a big way, bring the wage bill down, and then rebuild with younger players on a fraction of the wages that some of the players are earning at the club. And it also suggests that the rebuild is going to be without the current manager. You can't come to any other conclusion when you see so many players out of contract. And also, you know, given Hodgson has done superbly well, and so we can't be disrespectful to him in this conversation. But I think that Palace do have a desire to push on. They don't just want to be fighting against relegation every season. They want a better style of football and they want a younger man to come in and reshape their future. Again, with Lampard, I've made the point, so I don't need to make it again. Would he be a good fit for the club? I don't see why not. He's young, he's progressive, he does like young players, so he'll look into that academy and see who he can bring through. So I don't see him as being a bad fit at all. It would just be interesting to see whether they go for him or not.
I can't believe they've not got this sorted already. You know, it's been the world's worst kept secret for the reasons Darren has articulated, that Roy Hodgson will be stepping aside at the end of the season. They've let these players' contracts run down because they want someone to come in with a new broom and make a clean sweep. Surely they know who they want. I mean, I was told a few weeks ago that Sean Dyche had been spotted house hunting in South London. We mentioned that on this podcast. Now, all of a sudden, Lampard's name emerges. I know for a fact they've also spoken to Patrick Vieira. But how have they let it get to the middle of May and they still don't know who their manager will be next season? That doesn't, to me, suggest that the club has too much foresight.
Right, that's it from us. We're back on Monday morning when you wake up to look back at a weekend of fun and nod towards a plethora of midweek action. There's so much next week, including Leicester against Chelsea again. That game is going to be at Stamford Bridge, and it's a key game in terms of the race for the top four. So that's in midweek next week. And I'm going to Burnley versus Liverpool next week to do a commentary, and Brighton versus Manchester City as well. I'm going to take a coat to Burnley this time rather than forget it like I did last time. I suppose I'll have to take a Burnley coat with me, since they've given me one. Right, that's it. Darren, have a good week. Crook, enjoy yourself. Please rate and review the podcast and tell all your friends to subscribe to the Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on TalkSport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.